Romulan, Klingon, whatever else.
Hey, Barry, can you say hello in Klingon? QMD, K2RIW.
Actually, I was going to ask you that question. Nope, I can't watch that channel. But I do receive it.
Yeah, these, ITC, I think it was missing out. It stands for Information, Technology, and Culture, ITC. There's a number of Chinese channels, some of them that are purely Chinese, some of them that are primarily English with Chinese subtitles or vice versa. And they're trying to teach you Chinese. They're showing you the calligraphy, and they're showing you how to pronounce things. They're trying. So there are some interesting other channels out there that we never used to get, or at least nowhere near as many of them as we're now getting. But over-the-air television broadcast is nice, but my goodness, channel 9-1, thank goodness it's the same thing as 9-2, because I don't get it with more than about 20% reliability. Channel 2 and 4, I get the 2 with about 85% reliability, 4 with about 90% reliability, because of multipath problems. And so I need a higher gain aimable antenna that changes from day to day depending where the multipath is coming from, because the intersymbol distortion cannot be tolerated by my my particular digital television receiver. And yet, there's predictions that the digital television demodulator will become more and more computer savvy and become more and more like a rake receiver, where it literally models itself to all the multipaths and takes it back out digitally on a dynamic basis. There are predictions that that's going to happen, but I wonder. Another thing I'm noticing is that the electronic program guide telling you what channel, what program you're watching right now, what program you're watching right now, what's coming up in a half hour, an hour, and so on, those programming guides are now being de-emphasized for the over-the-air television broadcast people. In many cases, the program guide is not being supplied. Sometimes it's being supplied with a huge number of errors. Sometimes it's the wrong day, the wrong hour, and whatever. It's saying that you're going to be watching program so-and-so, and you're watching program such-and-such, an entirely different program. So they don't even bother worrying about keeping the guide up to date on many of the major channels, because they think such a small percentage of the people are watching over-the-air broadcast. So I've gone from what used to be a primary citizen, over-the-air broadcast television watcher, I'm now a secondary citizen. And all the people watching cable and satellite are the primaries. It's quite a flip-over. But the range has drastically decreased, the reliability has decreased, but now there's more channels to watch. And is it, in the big picture, is it better? I ain't sure. And I'm not so positive I would have voted for it. But the communication systems that the first responders are in the process of buying, my goodness, are there horror stories along those lines. And an awful lot of those horror stories you do not hear about, because the organizations involved are so darn embarrassed that they're not making it public. Therefore, the brand new victims of other first responders in other communities are falling into the exact same trap.
Yeah, there's a company called Motorola which doesn't want you to hear those stories also.
Okay, give us a couple of words on that, Barry. N2MB, K2RIW.
I think Motorola, they'll probably sue me after tonight, but I think Motorola has really got a monopoly on that stuff. And they're tying up, the police communications. They're into everything right now. Very, very big. And they're pushing this Moto Turbo thing, which, in my opinion, is pretty bad.
Now, that's not the only brand available. There are two or three other brands. And maybe they're only getting 40% of market share. But any of the brands of digital-like communication, with all kinds of claims of more channels, more reliability, and higher fidelity, I think in a lot of cases, all three of those are not true. You're familiar with some other brands, Barry? Go ahead.
I've seen some brands which are I guess they're code compatible with Moto Turbo. They might be licensed by them. I don't really know the politics involved, but I do know they sound equally as bad. That I do know.
K2YZ2, is the time right?
You've got it, Matt.
Okay, I know of one other brand that's being used in first responders a lot, and that's the ICOM. I know ICOM makes some really good commercial radios as well, which they're using in first responders. I don't know the third one, but definitely know ICOM's one of them. Definitely not as big as Motorola, but they're big too, especially down south.
That's good to know, Matt. Thank you. Barry, I wonder, since you usually have the latest and the greatest, you probably have used one of these Wuxon things. And it looks to me like, for the money, that can give you an awful lot of performance. Have you ever fiddled with one of those, Barry? N2MB, K2RIW?
Actually, no. I'm not very involved in FM or even the digital stuff. I really don't get into that very much, so I haven't been. I heard about them. They're very reasonable. I know everybody's buying them, but I don't really think I need one because I don't very rarely use, I guess what you call a handy talkie or something. I don't get into that very much.
I'm actually on a Wuxon right now, Dick.
Give us a couple of words on that, Matt. You're happy with it? Some of your friends using them, and they're happy with them? And some of those Wuxons cover 2 meters through 450 and a little bit beyond and almost everything in between. I think they cover FM broadcast, some of them a little bit of AM broadcast, 2 meter and 450. Over to you, Matt, K2LIW.
Yeah, Matt, you know, it sounds really good, by the way.
Yep, that's right here. They sound extremely good, and the only way you would know you're going to watch it or not is unless you see it. I've had other hams compared to a Yaesu as well. Actually, K2YO compares it to the Yaesu all the time. My particular Wuxon covers from 142 all the way to 520 megahertz. And it's also rated for commercial use as well as hams.
Yeah, aren't there versions that also cover some of the broadcast bands, FM broadcast or AM broadcast? Is there a version that covers some of those other frequencies, to your knowledge, Matt? Go ahead.
Affirmative. Actually, all the Wuxons have the FM radio put in with it, which is nice. It also has the SRS function and everything else. In fact, I have the box right in front of me. It says it goes up to 1750 hertz burst tones, DTM encoding, CTCSF and DCS scans, and it also has the SRS function. SRS function as well, and it's waterproof.
When you're on the FM band, is there a front panel indicator telling you what frequency you're on, Matt?
Affirmative. It actually has two ways you can do it. You could actually have, let's say I want this frequency on one. It has two frequencies. I can put on the FM radio on the other one. And when someone transmits, it will override and pick up the person talking over the FM radio, and then it will go directly back to the FM radio.
Matt, can you randomly tune it up and down the band, or do you have to program every channel in before you get on?
Nope, you could randomly tune it, and you could actually program it. You could do either or.
Can you step it? Could I start at 144 and slowly step up every one of the channels to 148? Go ahead, Matt.
Affirmative. You could do that as well.
And where you told me you had it on the FM mode and it would flip over when somebody came on, I guess it's sort of a priority channel thing. In other words, if the FM ham radio channel you're monitoring becomes live, it'll flip over to it and disconnect the FM broadcast you were watching. Is that sort of that you were listening to? Is that true, true, Matt? Go ahead.
Yep, that's affirmative.
That sounds like a lot of radio. What's the approximate purchase price of that one, Matt? Go ahead.
Case, it's a wider case. I got it for $110. I've heard them go anywhere from $99 all the way to $130. So, for the price, you really can't beat it. It even has a flashlight on it.
Matt, how many ham bands does it cover?
Well, the one that I have covers 200 channels completely. So, if you want 200 channels all ham, I would say 200 channels all ham.
No, no, I'm talking about bands. In other words, 2 meters, 440, 1296, you know, how many bands is it covering?
2 meter and 440. That's all that it covers.
For your 2NDG, comment?
Whiskey 2, it sounds like November Delta Golf. Correct me on that one, sir. Give me your name. KQRIW, my name is Dick.
Yes, Dick, November Delta Golf. It's Neil. There's also a 2-meter and 220 version of that same radio. So you can get it 2-meter 440 or 2-meter 220.
Very priced, Neil. Very nice. Are they close to the same price? In other words, some people would buy one of each?
I think so. And there's a couple different versions of the radio. I think if they have a newer one that'll go down to 2.5 kilohertz stepping. Different price ranges, but they all range, like Matt was saying, from the 100 to 130, and I think they have one higher priced, heavier duty one that goes down to the really narrow channel spacing. The three major brands of Chinese radios we're all seeing now, and we all have one or more of them. It's the Waukshun, which some people say is ocean, which is what it means, I guess. Baofeng, B-A-O-S-E-N-G, and TYT. Those three brands are the ones that are dominating the Chinese radios right now.
Good information, Neil. Does Waukshun make a triple band radio that covers 2 meters, 220, and 440? Or do you really have to buy two radios to get those three bands?
No triple band yet. It's rumored that TYT is working on one. The Baofeng that some of us have is modifiable to receive on 220. It seems like it transmits on 220, but it puts out power in the milliwatts because the filtering would be wrong at that frequency. So you can stretch it to work on 220, but you'd have to be line of sight. I can key up our 220 repeater from the train when I can see the North Towers, and that's about it. And I don't think anybody can hear me.
KC2YD2 for the district office.
Go ahead, Matt.
Okay, Neil would probably know a little bit more, too, but I know, too, that Waukshun has been working on a Bobo transceiver. Same thing, and it's supposed to resemble one of the fancy Yaesu 2-meter, 77-meter radio, so it could have two frequencies going at the same time, and can hear two frequencies at the same time as well.
That's correct.
Well, we've come a long way. and the amount of radio we can buy now for $100, $150 and so on, when it comes to setting up fox hunting setups where you have various transmitters and receivers locked together, sounds like it's getting easier and easier. In the case of the Roxxon, how about batteries? By that I mean, can you change the battery if you kill that one, or must you wait to recharge it? And is there a larger battery? What kind of battery life do you get? Anybody want to answer that one? K2LIW?
K2LIW. To give you an idea that I've had this particular Roxxon on all day since 8 o'clock in the morning. I still have the full battery life of it. The other great thing about it is, yes, you can get another battery cell for it, and it even has a AA battery for emergency uses too.
Is changing the battery fairly easy, Matt? And if you wanted to get a super large battery, is there a way you can adapt it that you know of? Over to you, Matt.
Changing the battery is extremely, extremely easy. All you gotta do is just pull down the two sides and it pops right off. I don't know of any extra super large battery that they have for it, but lasts for a day easy on one battery cell, and they have the AA cell too. The other thing which is lovely about the radio is it comes with the charger already, so you don't have to buy the charger separately.
WB2IKT, comment on that. Mr. IKT, start off with your name. Well, I should know, but I don't. And also, I'm going to be asking, is there a connector on the side where, if I had a belt-operated large battery, where I could plug into it, and therefore the Roxxon would continue to operate through the connector, and therefore I would get very much long life? IKT, you're spot up with your name, sir. K2RIW, my name is Dick.
Sure, thanks, Dick. K2RIW, MMS, this is WDTI-KT. My name is George. And I too own one of these radios. There's a variety of accessories. Extremely versatile. It comes with a 12-volt so-called cigarette lighter plug that plugs into the charger, thus making the charger a mobile charger. But the charger also has a 117-volt AC plug on it, and you can plug it into your home. So either way, you can charge the battery. The back of the radio is replaceable, because that's a battery system, and there is a battery eliminator, which also has a 12-volt cigarette lighter plug-type cord on it. So you can actually operate the radio directly out of the cigarette lighter cell. So battery system is very versatile. The company sells batteries at a reasonable price. You can snap the battery off and snap it back on in a matter of a few seconds. And it has a secondary battery that remembers all the settings on the radio. So then when you change the batteries, you don't lose your settings. Back to that.
My goodness, that's nice. So it's got a lithium cell inside the printed circuit board, probably good for 7 years. Either that or maybe it's got a flash memory. What's your guess as to how it holds all of those settings, George? Go ahead.
I have not opened it up and taken a look at it, but I suspect it's probably flash as opposed to a button type battery.
Yeah, I think that's a good guess because flash memory these days is getting very high in capacity and very low in price. My HP 50G calculator has a 2 gig plug-in flash memory, which my son seems to remember we bought them for $2. 2 gigs for $2. For a little flash memory stick, and I don't think there's any battery built into that, but I'm not sure. That's a lot of memory in a small package for a small size. I guess our modern day digital cameras have really pushed that technology very far. Out of curiosity, anybody know when it comes to the little flash memory cards that you can put into a camera these days, How many gigabytes can I buy these days for a reasonable number of dollars? Anybody got a guess on that one? KQRIW?
WS2I.
WB2IKT. Walmart is selling 16 gigabyte cards for $14.
Okay, this is YDK with another comment on the WASPU.
Okay, we're going to go to Paul first, WS2N. Go ahead, Paul. And by the way, get ready for a space report. You got a Paul.
Okay, yeah, I got an 8, and it's 32 for my camera. The 8 was, on sale. I think I got it for $8 from Radio Shack, and I could have bought a 32. So there you go. Now they make the mini ones, too. Once you plug into a tablet. So I can bring my tablet 4 up to 32 of them on.
W2NDG, one last quick comment before a space report. Okay, Matt and NDG in that order. Go ahead, Matt.
Okay, very good. That's a good website for you to check out. It has all the information you want on WASPU Radio. It's www.WASPU, it's Whiskey Oscar Uniform, X-Ray Uniform Nancy, .us/. That's the U.S. WASPU website. And it even has the Goofing and the TYT models on it as well. And you can literally see all the possibilities that WASPU has to offer.
Good information, Matt. Thank you. Neil, you got it.
BGD, also.
All right. For anybody who needs a radio with extremely long battery life and is looking at these lower-priced Chinese sets, a bunch of people I know in Limark and otherwise have picked up the Baofeng UV5R, which is the radio that competes with the Wokshun. It's a 5-watt dual band like the Wokshun. One of the retailers that's been selling it, I think it's Radio Mart, has come out with a long-life battery for it. So it covers the back of the radio and then extends down below the radio. It does make the radio a lot larger. It looks like a smaller version of like a Motorola Jedi or something. It really does increase the size of the radio. But it's a 3,600 milliampere battery, milliampere hour battery, which is huge. I can only guess how long that would last. But if you really need something long life for an event radio, that's definitely one to look at.
And for a quick comparison, Neil, is the battery that's built into it closer to 1,000 milliampere hour?
I'm guessing it's 1,200 to 1,600. I'm not sure. Somebody who has one could probably tell me. I have the smaller Baofeng, which takes a battery that looks like a Nokia cell phone battery. So I'm not sure.
1,800, amazing.
Nice to know. Thank you. KC2WGB, you got it, John.
KC2WGB. Yes, Dick, I had two of those Wuxons, and very nice. They work very well, and they're rugged. They're well-built, and they are cheap. I got a very good price on them. The company here ordered 40. They had 4 left over, so I paid their price. They got them for $80 a piece with all the power cords, everything. It was a real good buy. I meant to tell you on the phone the other night when we were speaking, did you hear about the new request the FCC has to reinvestigate the cell phone radiation patterns again?
No, I haven't, but I would like to, and that sounds crazy. I mean, you can go to various websites that will list for you the specific absorption rate, SAR ratings, of each of the model numbers of each of the cell phones. And a person, you would think, could go down that list and say, I'm going to choose the one with the lowest specific absorption rate, and therefore I have the least amount of danger to my body. Good sounding common sense. Pretty much dead wrong, because the patterns you get out of those cell phones is reasonably close to omnidirectional. There's so little real estate inside that cell phone that you don't have very much capability within the laws of physics to control the antenna pattern. If you put each one of these cell phones, let me drop,
case, just to write it to you. Common sense isn't that common anymore, especially in today's world.
You're right, Matt. But if you take each one of those radios and you put it into one of these three-dimensional antenna pattern plotting devices, oh, there's one I've forgotten the name of the darn thing. It's this great big ring with 64 sensors to it. The pattern you get is what I call an apple pattern. It looks like a apple because the highest sensitivity portion of it is red, and there's a couple of dimples where the sun comes out. It's a very close to omnidirectional pattern. So you're not getting a different pattern, per se, out of each of these cell phones. So therefore, the one with the lower specific absorption rate is really the one with the lowest output power. You're going to have the most amount of dropouts and the least amount of range. And the cell phone itself really isn't a danger. The danger that we think we're getting from RF radiation, that darn word, is a vocabulary problem. The fact that it sends out a signal in all directions, it radiates. Therefore, you can call it radiation. Perfectly good word until nuclear radiation came along, and now we relate the two. And there's no relationship between the two, per se. What the cell phone does to a human being is it creates a small amount of heating. That's all it does. It has no other real effect. And we're talking about heavy use of a cell phone at a long distance from the cell site where it's running high power, and the local portion of your body gets heated by an extra 1 or 2 tenths of a degree Fahrenheit. That's what it does. That's all it does. And is that dangerous? There's a hell of a lot of evidence that says it's not. See what John's going to say. KC2WGB, K2RIW.
Well, Dick, I believe they've gotten so many mixed messages that they just want to do another study. So here we go again. I'm sure it'll be in the millions. And I know they're going to come up with the same result because nothing has changed. When they made that study, they had basically the same equipment they have now. It's not like we're examining from Tesla's time to now. So I think it's going to be a waste of money. But that's it. And you know, your question about why don't they ask the experts? Boy, is that a long history. If you remember, Plato said it. A pilot can never be the captain of the ship, even though he knows more. And I saw the arrogance of the captain cause a huge ship to crash right here in Staten Island because he told the pilot to stand down. He thought he knew better. What a sad state of affairs. But it's rampant throughout the world.
Are you talking about that ferry incident where a couple of people died? Were you in the vicinity of that one, John? Go ahead.
No, Dick, but I was sent there after it happened. No, this happened to two large Navy vessels. Huge. One was French and one was Pakistani. And I believe it was the French ship that told the pilot to stand down. And he ran it right into the Pakistani. Billions of dollars worth of damage. They were there for weeks getting it overhauled. Incredible. Because of arrogance. And that's the same thing you're talking about with they never go to the expert and leave the control in the expert. Even when they ask the expert their opinion, if that doesn't fit with what they want to do, they ignore it. I'm sure you're well aware of that.
It is said that in a number of situations, the person in command as far as making the choice of brand name of equipment going to be purchased, and he has the authority to write the check and write the contract and so on. In many cases, the guy might have some good management skills, but in many cases, the guy is light on technical knowledge, but cannot admit that. And it's because he can't admit that he doesn't know what he doesn't know, he's now making decisions based on the wrong criteria. When you're about to buy a system, and you're about to spend a lot of money, take your time. Hire the right expert. Find out what is the track record for that brand name and that model number. What towns and what first responders bought it in the past? And speak to those people. Are they happy with it? Is it doing everything they want? I mean, if it just got installed a week ago, then that's not the right people to ask. Talk to the guy that got it installed a year ago. And if you're buying serial number 101, where they started off with serial number 100, if you know what I mean. And you think you're getting the greatest, latest and the greatest. Oh, boy. You're buying the one with all kinds of bugs in it because it hasn't been solved yet, if you know what I mean. There's lots and lots of stories. I think there is more unhappiness than happiness when it comes to the new radios that first responders in almost every major city in the United States or in North America, the ones that they're buying. I think there's more unhappiness than happiness, and each one is unwilling to admit what a mistake they've made, and they're afraid of the negative publicity, therefore the word doesn't get out, and therefore the vendors of this equipment can keep doing it over and over again. It's sad. And life and limb is at
repeater. Timeout. Cancel.
KA62YGT, one more comment on that issue.
Hey, go ahead, Matt. But what I'm trying to say is that in many cases, life is at risk, and the person making the decision seems to have very little understanding of that. Go ahead, Matt.
The other issue with it is not really on the responders, it's more just on the federal government, because they're requiring everyone to have these types of radios, and they're giving the first responder agencies grants to buy that particular model. So for the chiefs to write the check and get it, and they're looking more on the legal consequences too if they don't adhere to what the grant that they got says, which is to get these particular types of radios. So you really got to look at the federal government side of things too, of how they can change their ways to make these grants more locally friendly.
And when it comes to the federal standards, there is reason to believe that some errors can be created there. Our FCC officials, in many cases, are attorneys, not engineers. In theory, they've got some smart engineers working for them, if they listen to them, if they ask them the right question. But in many cases, our official organizations that are responsible for the technology is being manned by people that only partially or even not at all understand the technology. In many cases, they're only attorneys. So there's room for error there. Paul, tell us what NASA has been doing. Give us some good news. I know that we're looking forward to that Mars mission that's going to take place pretty soon. And to, boy, my God, am I?
USN.
WS2N, yes. WS2N, you got a phone, K2RIW. You know who you are.
Very good, WS2N. I have that much here, so it shouldn't be that long here. We have the Higgs boson that was claimed to be discovered, although the scientific community claims it's a boson. They want to re-verify and make sure it really is a Higgs boson, so-called God particle. So that was announced on July 4th in Geneva. And we'll see. And I'm give it another couple of months before they really iron out all the details. But it looks like they probably did find this Higgs boson particle, which gives mass to everything, electrons and protons. What I read there, a smaller particle, it'll absorb a little mass. And if it's a bigger particle like a proton, it'll absorb more mass. This all happened within the first trillionth of a second or something of the Big Bang. Let's see how that goes. Let me drop it. An astronaut has been killed down in Florida in an accident. He was on a vacation with his family. Guy was the pilot and then a commander of two space shuttle missions. Alan Poindexter, called him Dex. So apparently it's some kind of an accident on one of these jet skis, which is every year I see one accident after the other somewhere in the country. Somebody's getting hurt or even killed. And he had just retired, and in fact, he went up last on STS-131. That's what a brought up a bunch of supplies for the space station. That was only a couple of years ago, I think early 2010. Before that, a few years before that, he was also in charge of a mission that brought up the European Columbus module. That's the European Space Agency's module that they attach to the space station. And that's one of their pet projects, just like we have the Discovery. Japan has the Kyber. Everybody has their piece of the space station. So he had brought that up with the space shuttle. So, getting off of bad news, you've got now in the private center of the space world, you now have a new one called Boeing. Boeing has now a spacecraft that they're being that they're working on. In fact, they drop tested it with parachutes and all, and this thing's going to be not the deep space, but again, bring cargo and people up to the space station, and they intend on having 7 astronauts on board with crew. So I guess they're going to compete against the Dragon SpaceX version, or maybe compete against Sierra Nevada, which also has a 7-passenger spacecraft. That one's designed to actually come back. Looks like a small shuttle. That one's going to land like a shuttle. These other ones come back like the old-style Apollo spacecraft. So that's the other piece of news. Another thing with China on the drop is ever since they started their push for space back in the early 90s, had the they call it the 921 space initiative in China. And they started off with one guy going up and eventually 2 people. Now they launched 3 up. One was a woman. And apparently that mission was successful. They went up to, I'm going to call it the space lab. They're calling it really a space station. I guess you could. It's really one gigantic module. Eventually they'll have a series of these things attached together. And, you know, some years down the road. And then I think I would call it a space station. But, they spent almost 2 weeks there, 13 days. They came back and landed in the Mojave Desert somewhere. Not Mojave, I'm sorry, probably near the Gobi Desert, somewhere in China, near Mongolia. And then one other little piece of information, the space station now has 3 people on board, and on the 14th of this month, they'll be launching 3 more to bring the crew back up to 6, which is the standard operating procedure for the space station. And again, launched by Russians. Boeing should have their spacecraft up and running around 2015. So they've got about 3 years before they test flight test. That's it. Those 5 pieces of news have been in the highlighted lately. Higgs boson, the astronauts killed down in Florida, Boeing, China mission, and
repeater timeout. Canceled.
We only lost the last 5 seconds, Paul. How is the Mars laboratory, which I think is called Curiosity, I believe that's due to land, is that the first week in August? So we've got a little bit more than a month away. Is that true, Paul? Go ahead.
Yeah, I think it was, August 5th. They keep giving it, every time I read it, August 6th, they're going by UTC time. So I guess probably late August 5th. And, last I heard was a couple of weeks ago, and as far as I know, that thing was still on schedule. I know it took off in November of last year, and didn't seem that was too long ago. They launched that on a big Atlas rocket. You know, it's a heavy, very heavy, heavy thing. It's about 4 or 5 times heavier than the Spirit or Opportunity. And this thing should operate I read one article that they wanted to get like 5 years out of this. So if they get 10 years, that would be good. I mean, you know, they always get more than they plan. But first, they got to get this thing on the ground. Back to you.
And that encounter, descent, and landing is a tough one. Oh boy, I think that whole sequence lasts what, about 2 minutes. But that's a very furious 2 minutes when a lot of heat shield work, disposing of it, drogue parachute, main parachute, the drop down line, if I understand correctly, then the rocket, whatever, the radar ground detector, a lot of stuff has got to turn on after sitting there for a year and do exactly the right thing. And I'm always amazed that no matter how much testing they do on the Earth, there's a limit to how much you can test. I mean, when you hit a Martian extremely skinny atmosphere at some ridiculous number of miles per hour, no really good way of simulating that on the Earth. So the real mission and the testing for that mission is rather limited, so there's a number of gambles involved. Back to you for any comments on that, Paul. WS2N, K2LAW.
Oh, yeah. 10 minutes before they hit the atmosphere, you know, they got to separate from the cruise stage. Then talk about, you know, the speed that they hit. Martian atmosphere is thin, but it still fills up thousands of degrees temperature. It comes in at 13,000 miles per hour. Now, if we're coming in from the moon or another planet, we're coming at 25,000 miles per hour because of the lower gravity. And Mars has, they don't come in quite that fast. They still come in at 13,000. That's moving along. And then they're going to slow down the craft. They have these thrusters to steer it as it's coming down. And then they have these weights that fly off to, you know, it's a little tilted one way or the other. They have these weights that you know, actual weights that they'll shoot off the spacecraft and like rebound this thing. And then they're going to come in and around 1,000 miles an hour, the parachute's open 1,000 miles an hour. That would rip it apart probably, you know, on Earth, but the air is kind of thin, so that's the speed they open the parachutes at, drop it. So they're going to time that one out. And then once they're below the speed of sound, they've got this heat shield that separates. And then after that, the radar looks at the ground. The heat shield is gone. Now the radar can see the ground. And that takes over. And then they get around 1 mile, and the spacecraft will drop out of the back shell. There's all these cables and everything. it'll be dangling like, you know, I don't know, maybe it looks like about 100 to 200 feet below the thing. And then next thing you know, I can't work when they've got the engines, 8 engines that are on the top, I'm going to call it sky crane, and that's going to slow it down. They're going to fire independently to put the thing on the ground. And 60 feet above the ground, you know, only going to be going like 2 miles an hour. Rover separates. His thing's on a cable, hits the ground. Cables break. Sky crane flies away. There's a lot of things that are going to. They've got. I hope they got this right, Dick. I mean, somebody better put the software together properly on this one.
Question, Dick. You got a chance.
Paul, do you know if they have a real-time camera, a video camera, that'll be turned on during the landing so that it could actually be seen? Was there any mention of something like that? Back to you, Dick.
I'm reasonably sure that the Deep Space Network looks for a number of individual signals that indicate this step and that step has been taken. But I don't think there's video on the way down. But let's see what Paul's going to say. WS2N, K2LIW.
I think it's similar to the Huygens program. You know, when they get close, they might have cameras coming on. That that whole heat shield and all blocks everything. They won't be able to see anything. But maybe when they, when that thing separates, when it's right near the ground, they might have something that might come on. So, and of course you want to see it in real time, you know. When they're listening to this and they realize safety on the ground, it already happened 15 minutes ago. So, it's interesting that, you know, you've got the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter flying around. That'll probably be set up to take pictures of it as it's going down. It did that with the Mars Polar Lander. Has real nice pictures of this thing with the parachute open. This is looking down on Mars. You saw those pictures. And it is a big parachute. So, you know, I mean, there's more spacecraft flying around Mars than you can shake a stick at right now. You work in photography or as a repeater. Back to you, Dick.
Lots and lots of attempts to look for life on Mars. I was looking at the numbers that give you pressure on Venus. We used to think that Venus would be a nice, a tropical environment. In reality, it's got an extremely thick atmosphere. At the bottom of that atmosphere on Venus, you have 150 Earth pressure. 150 times normal, 150 atmospheres of pressure. We take our best nuclear submarine and put it at that pressure, and it would be crushed. Can you imagine? The best nuclear submarine we own cannot tolerate the atmospheric pressure that's on Venus. That's a rough environment. It runs at the temperature that will melt lead. It's got a heavy acidic atmosphere and 150 atmospheres of pressure. That ain't the right place to go. Mars has got roughly half our volume, half our diameter, something like half our gravity. And Mars and Earth are the dense portion of this solar system. Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, that's where the planets are packed in tight. When you get out to the asteroid belt and then Jupiter and Saturn and further on out, that's where the spaces between the planets starts getting really big. So the dense portion of the solar system is the four inner planets. I'm dropping.
You remember the Varina landing by the Russians?
Yes, I did, and I think it lasted on the ground for only a small number of minutes because of that temperature and pressure. Is that true, Paul? Go ahead.
Yeah, they had a couple of them. I think the one they made 15 minutes or something, 20 minutes. But, yep, it did a couple of landings. You know, I've got them in pictures of the book that I have, and I thought it was 90 atmospheres, but 130, I guess, doable. I always thought 90 was the number. Either way, big number.
If you Google the word pressure, where they list all of the lowest to the highest pressures in pascals, there's a Google website, Wikipedia. I can't think of the extra word, but it's just normal pressures. If you Google those words, you'll get a great big list, and I think that list said 150 atmospheres is the pressure on Venus. Maybe it's 130, but it's a number bigger than the maximum pressure for a, I forget which class of nuclear submarine. So it's potent. So I guess we've only got a little more than a month to wait for this encounter, descent, and landing that'll take place on Mars. But as I was starting to say, if you made a scale model of where Mars and Earth are located at the time of the encounter, the nearest thing that I can think of that gives you the right size percentage is a 50-cent piece and a dime. They're roughly 2-to-1 in diameter, and Mars and Earth are 2-to-1 in diameter. So 50-cent piece represents Earth. A dime represents Mars. At the time of encounter, if you put them at the correct distance from each other, that scale model of 50-cent piece and dime, you put them half a mile apart. That's how far apart the scale model would be with 50-cent piece and dime, half a mile of separation. That's the dense portion of this solar system. So when people tell you that the space is empty, you wouldn't believe how empty it is. and all the diagrams you've ever seen in all of your textbooks that show you the Earth and the other planets. Those diagrams are way out of scale. Incorrect. If they really made the scale, the page would be blank, and it'd be very difficult to see anything. And they don't make it clear that the scale factors have been changed. Okay. Wes, what's the latest with you? And,
Repeater, timeout,
cancel. N2XJN, K2RAW in the tech net. Go ahead, Wes.
Yeah, thanks, Ian. Good evening, going on. I just came from Iowa. I was in local university over there and picked up some stuff. Practically, I could consider that donation to the science. It was $150 of 40 instruments. Some of them, I sent you the last set of the photographs. One of them is a beautiful 30 kilovolt scientific high voltage meter. Some of the electrometers, some of very unique, very much exotic stuff. That's one with. And the previous one, I sent you some strange-looking disc. I don't know if you look at them. John knows more about it. And thank you.
Go ahead, John.
Yeah, Dick. Wesley sent me some interesting-looking photographs of a disc. It's a focusing element. And it's a flat wheel, about three-quarters of an inch thick, maybe 13 inches in diameter. And it has various magnets positioned. Very interesting-looking piece. What exactly it was focusing, I don't know, but he has three of them. And I think you'd like to look at that picture.
Yeah, I see that late tonight, West had sent me a whole series of about 50 pictures or so. Which picture number should I look at first, in your opinion, John? Go ahead.
This was from last week.
Yeah, Dick, the pictures he sent last week, not the new ones of today. Those are the ones he picked up at the college.
Okay, so today on 756, those particular pictures are not the ones we're talking about. So we're talking about last week, and what date and hour email should I open? Go ahead.
Wesley, which one?
Yeah, it's the one that says recent purchases, which is the July 3rd.
Yeah, most of these were eBay purchases, high-power, high-voltage amplifiers, and a large neon tube and things like that. Are those the ones you're talking about, Wes? Go ahead.
Yeah, the title on it is Recent Purchases as July 3rd.
I think it's the bottom photographs of that group, last ones.
Yeah, there's a total of 7 eBay purchases there, or most of them are eBay. And is it one of the bottom ones you want to look at right now? Mecca was one of the purchases, a Mecca power divider. Go ahead.
Yes. Look at the very bottom, and you're going to see a strange-looking disc.
I should look at the very bottom one or the second one from the bottom there, Wes?
Very bottom one. Are you sure that you have a title, Recent Purchases, right? You see 1, 2, 3, 4 photographs, 5 photographs of the very strange looking disc. It is just the email, Tuesday, July 3rd, 2012 at 10:48 p.m. Title, subject, recent person.
Wesley, if I remember, I think the last 4 photographs were pictures of those discs. There were several different views, I don't know if Dick got that all as one package or if they went as individual photographs. So if it's not the very bottom one, it's one of the four bottom ones.
Yeah, I've noticed the problem is that Dick has, he doesn't have a Windows. His Unix system and that not necessarily send all of the the emails or receive all of the emails in the order that we used to look at them.
They almost look like a clutch plate thing.
I see the inductive wheel, and I see the clutch plate with the red spokes on one side. Is that the one you're talking about?
Yes, that's it. You got it.
I believe we just started discussing that last week, and that's something I guess that's in your possession now, Wes. And I guess my next question is, what is it, and what do you believe you intend to do with it?
Yeah, well, at first, my question was, what can I do with that? it cost me $45 for three of them. One is a completely new one. From the person that I purchased it, I've got the information that each one was $5,000 when new. And it does have a three set of the magnets, which brings you to focusing the plasma through that set of the magnets at the very, very middle of it. Now, two of them are slightly used, so you see the effect of the plasma, the imprint of the plasma on the other side of it. There are magnets just immersed in stainless steel or aluminium, I didn't determine that, and the other side is like a bath made from the thin copper. John, you would be able to explain that.
I see the gray markings on the back side. The front side has got a whole bunch of red markings, but the back side has got a bunch of gray markings, and I guess that's where the plasma was being formed in between those individual magnets. Is that sort of what was happening over to you, John?
From what I understand, yes. And evidently the hole in the middle is the aperture that the plasma was being sent through, I would imagine. So, you know, exactly what it was used for, I don't have a clue. But strange-looking device.
That it is. And now the very last one that has been on planet Earth is now in Queens, Long Island.
Queens, New York. When the offer was $45 for three of them, I couldn't resist. It might be good for just some kind of rotary devices experiments or just a plasma concentration. It's just for curiosity I picked it up, and that's why I sent it to you. I have a few other questions, although one of them is from today. I sent the material for the TechNet today, which is, I was kind of puzzled. I found the Army article, and I was puzzled whether the collider is the effect of the Army advanced energy weaponry, or just advanced weaponry, energy weaponry is the goal, but the collider is just simply a testing tool for it. And I have the article that I sent to you.
Yeah, I think it's labeled Digest of Technical Papers, 2nd IEEE International Pulse Power Conference. Is that the one you're talking about?
Yes, that's the one. Air Force Weapon Laboratory Committee, Now, what is interesting over there, they send about a fact of 100 terawatts of power with 2 nanoseconds surge of time impulse at 1972.
Do you remember what page it said that on?